live to live righteously. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode number 337, where we are joined by Susan Madsen. She is going to talk about all things women leadership, sister missionaries. We'll talk about women's roles within the church. And I venture to guess some things that I haven't even alluded to at this point. Thank you for being here, Susan.
It's great to be here.
So I hear Madsen, and I think Or any relation to Truman G or any of those folks?
No, it's a different line. My husband's ancestry are more from Montana and Wyoming.
Okay.
So. But I'm a fan of his. Truman Madsen, good stuff.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and your involvement with the church. Are you a convert or a lifelong member?
I grew up in the church. My father was in the seminaries and institutes, so taught. So very much was raised with six brothers. So very much in the church, did all the family nights, did all the scripture reading, really did all the way through. My mother was a stay-at-home mom. She didn't finish her degree. But I watched my father through the years get finish when I was eight his master's degree, and then we moved to BYU from Northern Idaho for two summers. When I was 15 and 16, I saw him get his doctorate degree. So that higher education for me was always important, and I knew, to be honest, from my patriarchal blessing as well, that I would. Whether I didn't know how I would use it, but that I would continue my education and end up with a doctorate degree.
Awesome.
So,
how was that being raised with all brothers?
I talk about that often in my research on developing lifelong leadership skills and how siblings and your family, you know, affect you. So I am, my style is kind of between feminine and masculine. I'm pretty tough, and my brothers would all say that. So they didn't get away with much. I was second to the oldest. But, you know, it really, I am tougher in terms of I don't get offended at things, and I was into sports with them and so forth. And they're great, great men still today. So I love it. But it has definitely influenced me. And I'm very much a driven person. And I think that some of that came out of being raised with a bunch of brothers, too. We're all athletes.
Oh, really? What was your sport?
I did, basketball was my one, but I did, I lived in a smaller town, so I did a lot of sports. So I love basketball and volleyball and softball. I loved that too. And I picked up in college, college racquetball. So I was on the BYU racquetball team many years ago.
Oh, really?
My husband was on the BYU ski team when we met. So.
Oh, cool. We'll get to that. Did you serve a mission?
I did. I served in Tampa, Florida. In the early 80s.
Okay. What was that experience like?
I loved it. I was very much, because my older brother went on a mission. I saw him, and I knew all my brothers would go on missions. So I was like, I'm not going to let them have an experience that I wasn't going to get. So I always planned on going on a mission, and I served 18 months. It was right at the time that men's missions kind of went to 18 months for a little
really?
Bit. So
okay.
One of my brothers had an 18-month mission at the same time. There were three of us out at the same time.
Oh, wow.
But you know what? I loved it. I worked hard. I'm a bit of a workaholic, so I worked hard, and I had all the hard experiences and all the great experiences. But I continue to say to young women today that if you're the most selfless person in the world, you'd go on a mission just to serve. If you're the most selfish person in the world, you'd go on a mission because of all it does for you. Because, you know, I study women and leadership, and I'm a leadership expert. You're forced into learning so many things so quickly, right? I mean, just how to get along with people, how to manage conflict, how to speak, how to, you know, all the communication, how to listen better, how to help people, how to teach. You learn so much that can benefit you, you know, the rest of your life. So I'm a very big proponent of missions for young women and young men and older people,
and,
too.
And at the time that you went, you were 21, I presume.
I was, yeah.
What do you think? I want to get to the rest of your life and how you meet your husband and that stuff. But what do you think of the change for women being able to go younger, but still not being able to go at the same time as men?
I actually have prayed for years that that change would take place. And by the way, my favorite change is women being able to wear pants.
Yeah.
I was in Florida and got my legs all bit up every summer, you know. But I actually, the day that that was announced, I think I got a call from the Tribune and the Deseret News here in Utah before the Commissioner of Higher Education, because I was working so hard in the state on women going to college. Mm-hmm. And the understanding, you know, the thought pattern was that I wouldn't be happy with that change because I want women to go to college.
Right.
But if we can get, but I was happy with that because of the development and the opportunities that women would have and the effectiveness that young women can have in the mission field as well. So I was happy with that. I am concerned, continue to be concerned, although we're doing slightly better on people going to college and graduating, that we don't take these breaks before and after mission. We need to go to college and then go on the mission and then come right back and get into college. So if we take breaks, which sometimes parents say, well, just take a semester off and work and earn money. I'm like, no.
Yeah. That is the derailing of that train.
It does, yeah. Especially for young women.
So let's pick back up. You meet your husband on the ski team at BYU.
Yes.
I've never heard of a couple meeting at BYU and falling in love and getting married.
Shocking.
So you're gonna have to tell me that story.
I know. I'm a little embarrassed. I'm a little embarrassed with that story. Not really, though. But I actually went to my first 2 years of college at the University of Idaho. And then my third year, I came to BYU and had a year here and then went and served my mission. And then right after came back, and my husband was in my ward.
Was he your home teacher?
No.
Okay, good. All right. So it didn't go that far down the cliche.
He lived, I think, below or above one of my brothers who was in my ward as well. And so I'm pretty intimidating to people. I'm very driven as a woman and as an LDS woman specifically. I'm a little outside the box. I didn't realize that till my mission when I was the only sister playing basketball with the elders.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you something that might get a smile on. So after my mission specifically, I really, I love to compete in sports and so forth, even foosball and ping pong. All right. So through that, after I served my mission, probably that year, I actually had, I think, two people I dated that I played ping pong actually break the ping pong
paddle
because they were so mad that I beat them.
Wow.
And one, a racquetball, actually, racket. And when I played my husband for the first time, I beat him in both. And he just smiled and laughed. He said, "This is the coolest thing I've ever seen that you could beat me in these things." And isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
So he was not intimidated. I can intimidate people sometimes. And through the years, he's been super supportive of me having my voice and getting my education and so forth. So he was great. We did a lot of sports and stuff as we were dating.
Yeah. How did you know that you wanted to study women and leadership and all the things that you study now?
Well, I'll tell you, I've always been interested, and it's shocking to people because they think, well, maybe you were just raised with a bunch of sisters because you like this women's stuff. And then I show a picture of all my brothers.
Yeah.
But I've always been interested. I remember thinking in my master's degree, which was exercise physiology many years ago. I had two little kids at the time when I did mine.
Wow.
I ended up every class looking at different elements of women's health. And my thesis actually was pregnancy and exercise. So I would look at things like PMS management through exercise and nutrition and osteoporosis and different things. And I ended up doing personal training and exercise with women. So I really started down that path a number of years ago. And then when I went back to a doctorate, I had four little kids. The youngest was three and the oldest was 11 at the time.
So no big deal.
But I'll tell you, I'll kind of pause from that and tell you that I feel absolutely called to do what I do right now. And I speak around the world on calling. I've written on that, and it can be from God for some people and some people that are not religious. It can just be this feeling that you're kind of made to do these things. So when I'm speaking in the Middle East or in Greece or someplace, I'll talk about this and I'll tell them, I feel called by God.
Yeah.
To do what I'm doing, to get the education I did, and to use my voice in the way that I am. So even my education, I felt so compelled and driven that that's what God needed me to do. I didn't know what it was for, to be honest.
Yeah.
I'm like, I just know that this is what I'm supposed to do. So we as women sometimes like to stay in our comfort zones more than men.
Sure.
I know the research on that. But I think because of my upbringing, you know, I kind of step out into the space and the unknown. And I think that's what I did. I just knew I was supposed to get my master's, my undergrad, then my master's after two kids, and then go back. And people said to me, I would get criticism, to be honest, from members.
Sure, some sort of shame on some level, I would bet.
And say, why are you, not very many, but some, like, you have four little kids. Why would you get a doctorate? And my response is to look at them straight in the eye and say, because God told me.
Wow.
And you know what? He did. He told me. And I had no idea why I needed it. And now, at my a little bit older age, when I look back, I'm in awe and I'm so humbled to know that if I would have waited and done it when everything looked perfect and my kids were out of the house, there's no way I would be able to make the impact that Heavenly Father needs me to make on sisters in the church, on brethren in the church too, and in the community and in the world. So I, bottom line, if people ask me why I do the work I do, I have to be honest, and that is because I feel called by God to do it.
Which is a pretty powerful platform to be able to stand on, and knowing that God blessed you in that time, because I can't imagine doing doctorate work and having four kids.
It was good. It was good, though. My mind has to be, it gets crazy, but I'd rather be crazy than bored.
Uh-huh.
And the first couple years, I had an 18-month period where after I had my first child, I taught junior high years ago, and then I had my first child, and then I had a second one real quick, not on purpose. But it happened.
A little blessing from heaven. That's all that is.
Yes, I love him, and I love him. And those two kids are 30 and 32 now. But, you know, I had a time, and it wasn't that long, where I really was in depression. And I didn't take medication or anything, but it was situational depression. And I just knew, I just got myself up. I changed the diapers. Things just were not flowing for me. And what happened, interestingly, as my husband finished his second master's, he got an MBA from BYU, we moved immediately to Portland, Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And within a couple of weeks, I was able to get into a one-credit elective class for my master's. I planned ahead. And it was all day Friday and all day Saturday. And Saturday night, when I came home, I just started talking to my husband, and I'm like, and I just rattled off everything I was learning, and I was super excited. And he, you know, wasn't that emotional at that time, but he cried and he just said to me, "You're back. You're back." So we decided at that point that my mind had to stay busy, and that maybe, and I'll be honest for your listeners here, that I really struggled through the years and fought with God in some ways on why did you make me this way? And probably until about 7 or 8 years ago did I finally decide he didn't make me wrong. Up till that point, I'm thinking, I'm not right. How come I can't fit in this box? I love my kids. I'm having my kids. But my mind wants to do these other things. And then about 7, 8 years ago, it finally just hit me that he has to have women like me, and women not like me in other ways, but he has to have women who are so diverse and different to help with the work that he has moving forward. And the role of women in this church is changing. It's changing, and it's an important change. I mean, one of President Nelson's quotes said, "Women of this generation are distinct from women of all other generations," talking about sisters in the church.
Yeah.
And then I do a lot of firesides, so I have some slides on this. And then Elder Bednar said a few years ago, he said, "We can't keep doing things as we've done before," right?
Mm-hmm.
And then my third slide is Sherry Dew, who says, "When we unleash covenant-keeping, committed women of the church, things will change overnight. And I don't think that's unleashed, but I think there's wonderful progress in the church right now to figure out how to, you know, more discussions on women in the priesthood and mm-hmm. understanding that. I've been doing firesides in Europe, working with a couple of the Area 70s over there. And when I do them, we call the firesides this. How strengthening the impact of sisters can strengthen the church. And so there's this whole set of power beyond belief, that when we figure out how to unleash the heads, hearts, and hands of sisters in this church in different ways, let's keep serving, let's keep doing all of those things, but in ways that are more, as Monty Oscarson would say, bold, mm-hmm. using your voice, being bold, defending the family, defending the proclamation. When we use and empower women's voices to do that, things will change. And I believe they are already. But I think we're not unleashed as women in the church. And that doesn't mean we need to be ordained in the priesthood or we need to wear pants at church or some of those things. There's deeper doctrines and principles that if we as members of the church would understand, I think that will move us forward, including myself as a woman, but also brethren as well. So I got off topic.
No. I think that leads us perfectly. I want to take a break for a quick second. And when we come back, I want to talk about what we could do to better unleash that power of women, what women could do and what men could do. We'll come back and do that in the second block of the Cultural Hall. I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah, now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks, in large part, to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something, and then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N @gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Consumer alert! Consumer alert! Dan the Laptop Man here from PC Laptops. There's an extremely insane computer infection called Zeus ZBot, infecting hundreds of thousands of computers across the world. This infection is super malicious because it puts you in danger by recording every keystroke you make into your computer, stealing your confidential information, including your banking passwords. You could be infected and never know until you have all your money sucked out of your bank account. At PC Laptops, we can help. If you think you've been infected or just want to be safe, please bring in your PC, no matter what brand it is, into any one of our locations right now, and we'll scan it for free. Why are we doing this for free? Because we want to impress you so much that if you or any of your friends need a computer, service, or phone repair, you come to PC Laptops first. Get into any one of our locations right now or check us out at PCLaptops.com. PC Laptops, where computers start at $7.99. PC Laptops, we love you!
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. Remember, if you love this discussion and you'd like to throw and show your support for the Cultural Hall, you can go to patreon.com/thecultural hall and you can do financial pledge. It's a one-time a month donation that you can do, as little as a dollar, that helps to pay for things like web hosting and microphones and electricity, those things that allow us the opportunity to be able to do the Cultural Hall. Susan Madsen, we're talking about what we can do to unleash the power of women.
Isn't that a great word?
I love it.
I'm using that more in lots of places. I just love it. And I think it's so true. I started using it really in Europe more. I have an Area 70 that I've really connected with over there. And the church in most countries over there is really kind of stalled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like they're trying to figure out how do we move forward? And the role of women, you know, being engaged in the community and being examples is just rising to the to the top there in terms of strategies to help the church grow in general.
One of the things that I think about is we have, as we mentioned in the last block, talking about that sister missionaries can serve earlier, more are opting to serve missions. And to me, my mind automatically goes to these women who have the opportunity now to serve in leadership roles. There are essentially like zone leaders and women and assistants to the president as women who will have these opportunities to lead on their missions and then come home and don't have similar opportunities to lead within their branches and wards, and how that will be discouraging to some, disenchanting to others, and quite honestly, lead some, I think, to leave the church entirely. So what can we do, both as men and as women, to really harness the power that is the women of the church?
Well, I'll broaden that just a little and say that some of the research I've heard of actually says the same things for elders and sisters when they return, that they've been in these leadership roles. And in some places, outside of Utah specifically, they get used more, but they can disappear, both men and women, in terms of having so much leadership. And then all of a sudden, they don't have the leadership roles or opportunities. Now, for sisters specifically, I agree exactly with what you said. We've got to figure out how to engage them. And there are ways to lead in the church, and different kinds of ways. And one of the things that's fabulous to me is when I go to the temple to see these young women. The other day when I was there, there was a young woman and she had a ring on, so she was married. And the rules have changed in terms of and I think working in the temple can be leadership in general.
100%.
I mean, and doing things in your wards and so forth. But one thing I talk a lot about in my firesides is that we think we need to have official callings to actually lead and influence in the church and outside the church, and we do not. So we need to find better ways to harness this energy and this potential within the church. But we don't have to ask people. I didn't ask anybody to start the projects that I've started. Mm-hmm. I just start them and I move forward. And so there's so much impact in the community that we can use our voices for. And so that's one thing that I would really recommend is to, for all of us, but especially young women, figure out how we can use all these leadership roles in the church, but outside of the church, in the community, in schools, in whatever, to continue our growth. So those are a couple of ideas.
One thing that I think, for whatever reason, may even come across as scary to some gentlemen is it's like, okay, hang on.
Oh, yeah.
you want the priesthood. Is that what you're saying? Now we need to ordain you to the priesthood. And I don't know why we get up in arms that quick, or why that's the knee-jerk reaction.
But it's because of the biases. It's because of the socialization that we've had, and we've all had socialization through the years.
So tell people
that's the way it's always been done.
So tell people about what you mean by socialization, so we can be aware of it. I think that's the good first step that we can do. But then secondarily, and I know this is unleashing the weapon that is Susan Madsen, tell us what socialization is as far as this goes, and then what we can do about it to affect a change.
So socialization is, some people see that word as a little scary. In fact, when I say empower, sometimes I have to be careful with that word too. But they're both very normal words that we use. So socialization is just our upbringing. Mm-hmm. And by the way, a couple months ago, I had a mayor, I do work with politicians, say, I raised my daughters and sons exactly the same. And I said, no, you don't. And he said, yes, I do. I said, no, you don't. It's impossible. We all have biases. And we raise girls and boys differently. For instance, do you have time for a little story?
Please.
Okay. So a few years ago, I was walking home from church with a friend of mine who had little kids at the time. Mine were teenagers, so they were running off. And it had just rained, and we were walking home from church, and she had two sons, and they ran through this puddle. And she just said, boys will be boys. And they had white shirts and little ties, all of that. And then her beautiful little daughter had this dress on. She ran through the puddle and she just grabbed her and said, no, you would get your pretty dress dirty. That is socialization. Socialization is even the way we hold our babies. There's one study that says we tend to hold our boy babies out towards the world and our daughters closer to the chest. I mean, we do
really?
Small. Oh, Christmas presents, the kind dolls versus cars. And I mean, all of this, the sports you choose to play, your daughter, your boys are in soccer and baseball, your daughter's in dance. Those are all socialization. Elementary school teachers. The research says that boys get 8 times more criticism in school than girls. But we socialize our girls to get, and they get praise from being quiet, from folding their arms, and to raising their hands. And the boys, we say, oh, those poor little boys. But actually, 20 years later in the workforce, they're like, if someone disagrees, they're fine. They it rolls right off their shoulders. And so they throw out more ideas, and women often just wait and for their turn, and sometimes their turn never comes. Does this make sense?
Yeah, yes.
Those are all like, there's so many. I mean,
right.
The way that we talk.
You're like, look at this list. I could go on and on and on. But
anyway, in the church, we do this very
a
strongly.
Lot. Yep.
And by the way, in Utah, and I love these topics, and I'm a very committed member of the church, but people ask me about these things all the time. And last summer in Utah, we were hit the ranking list as the second most sexist state in the nation. And with women, we're even more sexist than men. And that just means that we see women doing one thing and men doing another. Mm-hmm. Men should be leaders, women should not. You know, that the underlying tones, you see your mother and father doing different things, and that's socialization. So but all of that.
Isn't some of that, though, like really bred in within the church? Because you hear
absolutely,
that the fathers should be the breadwinners,
yes,
and that the mothers should be the nurturers. Like, that's not vague references to
it's
socialization.
Pretty
that is like, yes, this is the epitome of what you are speaking about.
Absolutely. And that's what the problem, and I totally support the family of the family proclamation. I mean, we do have different roles, but men should be engaged. Do you look at deeper talks? And, you know, mm-hmm, men should be real fathers in the homes. And it's not just babysitting when they're home.
Yeah.
It's fatherhood when they're home. And the same with mothers. Yet, you know, there's so many. What we end up doing is judging each other so harshly,
yeah,
on this set of men should do this, women should do this, when in reality, you know, it's not that cut and dry. And if you look at the Joseph Smith's day and Brigham Young's day, oh my gosh! I mean, the people say to me, well, women in the church, you know, shouldn't work outside the home or whatever. And I say, actually, look at church history. I mean, men were on missions for 3 years. They didn't send money home. I mean,
yeah,
who took? Women and men always, throughout all time, worked together. They worked together. They always worked. And really, it was really the 50s and 60s that it separated. And so those dynamics keep going. And I do, I have been, even though during part of my, you know, bringing up my kids, I did work full time. I am the nurturer in the home, and I do that. So I used to have everything more black and white in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing is clear to me is that the role of women in terms of using their confidence, gaining that confidence and using their voice needs to change in terms of how we see that in the church. So men, like you said, often like, we're in charge, we're doing this. Actually, I have a brother that's a stake president, and one that's a bishop, mm-hmm, and we have these conversations all the time. He said, well, presiding in my mind really means just protecting and overseeing. But unleashing, if there's a stake women's presidency, you know, he said, I don't go tell them what to do. I said, how can I help you? You are the ones needing, you know, getting the revelation. I need to support you instead of top down. So there's some interesting dynamics. I've seen this really cutting edge stuff moving forward because the church policy, and there's a difference, you know this, but I
right,
speak often of the difference between doctrine,
mm-hmm,
policy, and practice. And there's so many practices in the church that are really not linked to policy or doctrine.
But it's the way we've always done it.
It is. And that's what
the traditions of our fathers. And I just go, the very thing that the Book of Mormon teaches us.
I know.
Do you not get this? That this is not like everyone else and other churches. This is also within. These are traditions of our fathers that are, you know, blinding our faith right now. No, so, you don't get it? All right, fine.
So actually, what the next time I go back to the UK, I'll be doing some unconscious bias training for some of the leaders, brothers and sisters in the church. And I think that's an important thing, is to challenge ourselves. What are practices? What are, like, many wards still have the young men at the door and they pass the sacrament. There's mm-hmm. no rule that young women can't be at the door. I mean, right. If you look at YSAs, they're at the door all the time. But in my own ward, I have to say, I told my husband, who's the elders court president of my ward, tell him to put young women at the door just for the opening, because because they will have to look at people, welcome. I mean, the skill development of leadership would be great if you utilize that. So there's just many things that are not doctrine or policy that we need to, you know, become more equal. It's just respect. One thing I tell women who are really struggling, and I connect with women who are pulling away from the church often, they seek me out. Mm-hmm. And I just have to bear testimony that God loves women just as much as men, and that he, with some things that happen, that he is not happy sometimes, because he knows that women need to feel valued. And in this day, when things need to move forward in more countries around the world and more force, and people are leaving the church on the other hand in force, that we don't have the luxury to say only boys and men get to lead and use the voice. Heavenly Father doesn't have, we don't have that luxury. We need every girl and every boy and every man and every woman to find his and her voice, to find that confidence and learn to use their voice to move the work forward.
I want to take a break for a second. When I come back, I want to go into maybe a couple other examples, things that people can hear, like the women at the door, you know, to the chapel, some other things that we could maybe do. And we'll get to the three questions that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall. That's coming back in the third block. We'll be right back.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Coming back in 3, 2, 1. Time for the third block of the Cultural Hall. And if you're not following us on social media, please do. We're at the Cultural Hall, wherever you get it. If it's Pinterest, if that's your thing, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I think there's probably even whatever the Google thing, Google Plus. We probably still have that out there as well. And if you haven't left us a review, wherever you're getting this show available in podcast form, take a second and tell people how much you love it. If you don't like it, keep that to yourself. No one wants to hear. Susan Madsen, I just wanted to look at this. We had President Beck, Julie B. Beck, the former president of the Relief Society here in the Cultural Hall back in episode 295. I'm going to reference this so people can go back and listen to it if they'd like. And she talked about how as the president of the Relief Society, she was able to be in several meetings, right? Meetings with the brethren, and how at first she was like, oh, I know why I'm here. Because they need to have a woman. They need to be able to say there was a woman present in these meetings. And I think that it was Elder Holland, and you'd have to correct me or we'd have to go back and listen. So I'll just say it's Elder Holland and apologize if it wasn't. But who said, hey, you know what? You're here because God needs your voice as part of this meeting, and we need your perspective. So don't just sit there. activate. And she said it was at that point that she truly started to feel, you know, empowered in her calling and really be able to receive the revelation from God.
There's actually quite a few quotes where that's brought up. One thing that I want to put out there from the regular academic research, however, is that, and we need to consider that as we put together groups and teams and committees and everything in the church setting, is generally speaking, when women go into a meeting where it's all men or mostly men, they will naturally talk 75% less. They do not talk. Men, if they come into a bunch, come into a meeting with a bunch of women, will talk the same. But women typically, without even knowing it, just don't feel as welcome and will sit more in the back or whatever. So until something is brought up, just like we'll give credit to Elder Holland for.
Yeah. If it's not, sorry, Elder Holland. It'd really be something you might say.
Empower women, and so they don't feel like the token, right? Then oftentimes, if you're, and then people say, well, they could talk if they wanted to, but there's all kinds of dynamics with that. So I think that's fascinating. But women need to be there. I guess one of my points is that just have a one woman is not the answer necessarily. Yeah. 30% is kind of the tipping point when things change in terms of city councils or state legislatures or groups. When 30% of the group is women, then they'll use their voices in more
interesting
force. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. You know, another thing that we've brought up several times here in the Cultural Hall is Nyland McBain.
Yeah,
you're familiar.
She's a friend.
and she talks in her book, Women at Church, a lot about the not only the shifting roles, but the ways that we can really be better.
Some of those practices.
Yeah, challenge some of those practices. And one of the things that she points out is, you know, women as Sunday school presidents. Yeah. You talked about women being at the door to greet instead of just the young men. In my ward, we have had, you know, when they do testimony Sunday and someone is wandering with the microphone, typically in the past it had been only a young man. We've had a young women do it.
Oh, wow.
Are there other things that we're not considering that would be, again, not against doctrine, but would be against the traditions of those that have gone in front of us that maybe we don't consider?
Well, and a lot of them, again, are just not against policy either. I mean, they're just fine to do. It's just practice. So one of my brothers, who's been a stake president, told me that he often has, so during state conference, the stake presidency is sitting at the stand, they actually often have their wives sit up there with them. So just that presence, when you see this mass of blue suits and that's it, it's overwhelming, and it really does. Some women are more sensitive to it than others. One time I was in a YSA stake, and some things have not bugged me as much, but I had an experience of my brother, who I play racquetball with a bunch, told me that the Lord needed me to have this experience. And that was, I was just sitting there before a state conference at this YSA, and I looked up and I counted, and there were 60 men in blue to black suits and patting each other on the back. Not one woman was standing up. This was before the meeting. And I just got this sinking feeling, and I didn't know where it came from. And I got over it, and it took me a couple of weeks, and I was like asking my brother, I'm like, I've never had this. And he said, the Lord needed to have you feel the pain that some women feel in this church. Mm. And I was like, I don't like this.
Yeah.
I don't like this. I've just ignored it before. But when you, I mean, the scholarly research on role models, and I've been deep into literature right now on identity formation of young women. If you do not see role models of women, it's so, like, if you don't see women speaking in church that much, if you, and to be honest, if you don't, as women in the church, see more women speaking in general conference, you are naturally, gender is so important in the plan of salvation. With that gender, that means that you associate with women more than men. You can hear the concepts, you can hear the, but when there's a woman speaker, there's a connection. And when we don't have as many women speakers, that connection. Women struggle to see their identity and link their identity. Is this making sense?
Yeah.
It's very complex.
It's making sense, except the natural question for me is two parts. One, God has to know this information. And two, I would think the brethren, you know, that being the leadership of the church, the 12 and the first presidency, are very educated men and have to know this as well. Yet
most people don't. It's unconscious. Most people do. But I think, I mean, we still have women leaders in the church and identity, but that identity is really important. So just having the wives of the brethren maybe on the stand with them and seeing more women, which the church has at general conferences, you do see that, is a step in the right direction. It really is.
But we don't have, I mean, with this last general conference, I think there were two. Okay. You know, it's two women speakers, right?
Yeah.
And there were more than, you know, seven men who spoke. So where is the disconnect? Is it that we're trying to get away from it? Do we feel like the, and I'm air quoting this, that the priesthood takes the leadership?
That's a tricky thing. Yeah.
I mean, but for women, this is the thing that if within the 6 months between conferences they're able to come at peace with it, they come back come October or April and go, oh yeah, no, never mind.
It's true. You bring up a good point. I guess my whole point, though, I get what you're saying, but my whole point is that all of us have to be thoughtful about how we engage young women and young men, and that identity is a piece that we need to think about.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, just because you're in a role doesn't mean you're listening to all the research and thinking about all the research. And so I think sometimes just with unconscious bias, we make choices and don't make other choices. So I'm sure that's happened sometimes. But there's little things that we can do, I think.
Tell me about
and
the little
I love
things.
It. I mean, the book that Nyland had wrote, you know, that's so good. But just having a presence, making sure that any meetings that you're having in leadership, there's very few these days that you should have women at most of them, and not just one to represent, but more. Mm-hmm. So just being thoughtful on those kinds of things, and having places where women can speak to women and women are included in those conversations are important. Just the little things like being at the door, like you said, and being careful about how we speak about the priesthood, too, because we know from doctrine that women have priesthood power.
Yeah.
And that
recognizing
women have priesthood
it and having
authority.
Respect
we don't
for
have
it.
Yeah, we don't have keys, but we definitely, I mean, it's been pretty clear that women, you know, sister missionaries, what other authority are they teaching from besides priests? So just one of the things, our stake, when I was proud of our stake to do this, we actually had a specific, they had a meeting first for the brethren and had the sister, like the primary stake president and all the, actually speak about a recent article that came out in the Ensign. And it really kind of influence the brethren.
Sure.
And then those sisters like, why weren't we there? So then they had another one on Sunday afternoon where the sisters had real talks from other sisters on understanding the priesthood and the priesthood power in more depth. And I thought that was a really important thing. And when the leaders, I've heard feedback, when the leaders talked to their young women and said, do you understand that you can have priesthood power? The look on their faces, they were just like, oh, really?
Yeah,
like,
what?
Like, what? Yeah. This is new. So understanding those things are just so important. So there's just many little things. So I just challenge all of us, you know, brethren as well as sisters, have a brainstorming session and get that and think outside the box because we can make choices and do things. And Heavenly Father has given us good brains to be able to think about that. So,
I share this kind of in the closing. So this is something that I'm particularly sensitive to. Whether I don't actually know where it comes from. I have a very strong mother who that's probably where some of this comes from. But serving in an Elders Quorum presidency right now, I thought it would be great if we had a couple of women from the Relief Society one time come in and teach one of our lessons.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Great.
A completely different kind of situation from how they would teach to how they would approach a topic to the attention from the men to, you know, how they would pay attention to a woman. And we couldn't get anyone to do it.
So you brought up a whole interesting can of worms. So one of the things that I talk about often, and you have to approach this from two sides. And one is to work with women themselves. Because if they've been socialized, and we've talked about what that word means, their upbringing, that women shouldn't really have a voice and they should be quiet and they shouldn't, you know, be engaged in things. We have to work with women. I'm always teaching women about the confidence so that we understand what's going on. We're more comfortable being in the comfort zone oftentimes. Yet true learning comes when you're out of the comfort zone.
Right.
And Heavenly Father wants us to learn. So that's internal. We have to work with women. And when I do firesides, I talk about rumination and perfectionism and all these really fun topics to help us get to know. So you can do that all day long. But if you don't have work, so you can't see my hands and what I'm doing, but there's like two sides. One is working with women themselves. And the other is working with the systems and processes and the people in power.
Mm-hmm.
If you do not do that, both sides, they will not go forward. So I'm proud of the Elders' Court Presidency and your ward to do that. But often you have to build women themselves. And there's got to be someone in there that has, you know, that they're uncomfortable. They're like, that's not my role. But that's what I do at my firesides is try and change that perception. And I do that with the Spirit. The Spirit is there and people get the witness of the Spirit. That it is our role to use our voices. It's our role to use our head, heart, and hands in every way. And that looks different from different women. A lot of women in my area, they serve and they make food. I don't like to cook and I don't do crafts. And I serve, Sunday for 2 hours. I had three sisters over to help go through and coach them on their strengths.
Awesome.
Because they needed to understand I contribute in different ways. So we cannot judge each other because we do not know what God has told each of us to do and what God needs us to do. So we need to lift each other and help each other. But all women need to find their voices and their confidence and start using those in more power. I'll use that word in more powerful ways. And we need both men and women to flourish. So again, getting back to your question, I'm kind of off a little bit here, is we've got to change the culture in terms of women themselves feeling and understanding the doctrines and the policy, more the doctrines and the love of Heavenly Father and their worth and their expectations from God that they need to use the voice. But we have to help men understand that as well, right? And women sometimes will keep women in check, you know, so women and men need to understand that. So we have to work on both sides. But I would not give up if on your little task.
Yeah, I won't. I won't.
Our ward has done that. But we had our really study president went in and taught.
Yeah.
And then we had, I think,
vice versa was the hope. And that didn't work out either.
they didn't want you in there.
We won't give up. Our time is short. We ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall three questions, so I'll ask them of you right now.
Okay.
The first calling is do you, or the first question is, do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
I do have a calling. Before the change of the church to 2 hours, I had one of my favorite callings in the church, and that was a Sunday school teacher, but it was very specific to marriage relations. And then we changed it the last year, and I loved this. It was about helping people. We used the 12-step program, but not for the 12 steps.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for the 12 steps, but for just change in general. So I met in the bishop's office, and we all chose things like, I want to be less judgmental. I want to be a better father in these ways. And oh my gosh, did I have fun. I'm a change person. I love that.
Awesome.
And so I did that. So now I actually love my calling, but it's super cushy.
What is it?
So I am the, I think it's a made up calling. I am the empty nester. Like I'm
all the people who don't have kids at home anymore.
Home evening once a quarter on a Monday night, once a quarter. So four times a year we meet at my house and I lead a discussion. I do it the way the church wants, and that is I don't prepare a big lesson. Uh-huh. I just ask questions.
That's awesome.
Isn't that? It's fun. And then I have food. So it's only four times a year. But, you know, I do a lot of traveling and speaking and do service of the church in other ways. So But I love that calling.
If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
I like teaching, so yeah. I would go back and be able to do my teaching one. But the calling I have is good. Gospel doctrine, I like those kinds. Or Relief Society, that's kind of a cush calling, too. I do love to teach, though, especially when I have the space to facilitate, not just lecture.
Right. The last question we ask everyone is, what is your favorite part of your faith?
Ooh, that's a good question. My favorite part of my faith. I would say that it is personal revelation. I have learned throughout my life. I was raised in a home that taught me how to pray from the youngest age ever, mm-hmm. and how to get answers to prayers. And I served a mission and used that constantly and have used it since. I depend on personal revelation. I love that I can pray to my Heavenly Father and in the name of Christ and get revelation on even small things. And I use that. I love the scriptures that have taught me how to get revelation. And I actually use the warm feeling and the stupor of thought a lot. Some people are like, why do you use the stupor of thought? But I move forward and I make, I move forward on things. And sometimes it's just a stupor that I forget about it and I don't. And I'm like, that's not right then. If I'm excited about something, then it kind of goes away, that stupor. So I love the personal revelation. That is my favorite.
Awesome. Our time is over. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the